That's why. Okay, let's check the 49.
Dure na kyavaram karma.
Buddhi yoga dhananjaya.
Buddhau sharanaman viccha.
Buddhau sharanaman viccha.
Kripana palahetavaha.
Kripana palahetavaha.
Durena hi avaram karana buddhi yoga dhananjaya. Buddhau sharanam anvicca kripanaha phala etavaha. So here, durena avaram. Durena is kind of like an adverb, very far away, right? So here, avaram, the word avaram means inferior. So karma, here it says, hi avaram karma. Karma, which is done for the fruits, for the result, I do a karma out of raga dvesha, for the fruits of the action. Those type of karmas are far inferior. Durena avaram karma, okay? Far inferior. Hi, because, or indeed, they are far inferior, so these karmas that are done out of raga dvesha, by doing it for the results of my actions, buddhi yoga, they're far inferior from buddhi yoga, from karma yoga. Your buddhi means that attitude, karma yoga buddhi, which we're just learning about. So, karma done out of raga dvesha is far inferior to buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga is in the fifth case, and so when something is separated from something else in this way, it's far inferior from that thing. That's why it's in the fifth case. Hey, Dhananjaya. So, Buddhau Sharanam Anvicca says, that being the case, because that's the case, because of that, take your refuge, your Sharanam, your Sharanam, your refuge in that karma yoga buddhi. Seek refuge. And vicha comes from icha, which means to desire. So may you desire after, may what you are going toward and what you're seeking as your refuge, may that be the karma yoga buddhi. So buddha is in the seventh case, so sharanam and vicha, may you seek refuge. Right? Seek with desire, may you go after refuge in the karma yoga buddhi. Then he says, kripanaha palahetavaha. Those ones who are, this is another name, you know, that palahetavahas. Those who feel them, who are take themselves to be responsible for the pala, those ones that are going after the karma pala for the out of raga dvesha and consider themselves the karta, the doer, the one who is responsible for gaining that karma pala. Those people are kripanaha. Kripanaha means miserly. They are misers. And this word kripana, really, in the Bhasha, they chant a verse, they tell a verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And what that verse says is, those people who don't make use of their buddhi to gain knowledge before the body drops, right? They don't make it, that those people are kripanas, kripanaha. Okay. So those people have not made use of the buddhi that they have available to them to the full extent. They've only used it in the most mindless way. The most mindless way is just let me go on having these momentary enjoyments and just live the life really without any viveka or any discrimination or kind of trying to figure out who am I here and what is really going on and what is the means for my really for my wholeness or my happiness, a lasting happiness, just not a momentary happiness. So they have it, the buddhi is capable of this type of viveka, this type of discrimination. And since I'm living here and I'm a human being here, you know, I have then kind of denied myself the full use of this capacity I have in terms of my mind to really analyze my experience. And so in this particular Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it's called Kripana. And so these people who are miserly in the sense of to what extent they've applied their knowledge or made use of the intellect that they've been given, it's very small compared to what can be done. So this it's kind of a pep talk to in the Brihadaranyaka, you know. So he was talking, I think, to Gorgi or somebody, and gave this pep talk, you know. So use your mind, think, try to follow, try to understand, you know, try to understand your experience. Why are you here? Probably all of you that are here now thought a lot about, why am I even here? Why did I take this birth? What is it all about? How am I going to, who is God? You know, I used to think, I definitely believed in God, but I wanted to come down and show himself to me or talk to me somehow. You know, I'm going to do all this, open a book and see what it says and hope that there's some special message in it, or try to find some way of coming into communication with Bhagavan. Just some way to find out that yearning can be so much you want to have, that you want to know who you are and why you are here and who is God and what's the purpose of all of this. So when you start thinking of it like that, I mean, those seem to me like obvious questions. They're obvious questions because here we are, and what are we doing here? You know, and especially if you're having some hard time, like when you're a teenager. For me, I was a teenager and having a hard time with my parents and everything, and I was just thinking, what is the purpose of all of this? Why did I take this birth? You know, what am I supposed to accomplish here? Is this God? What does God want from me to be here? So to have those kind of questions, you know, is for some people that's normal, and for other people those questions don't arise. And so what the Rishi is saying in this verse in the Brihadaranyaka, if these questions have never arisen in your lifetime, you really haven't used your buddhi. Not to anywhere near the extent that you could use the buddhi. Okay? Because the questions about who you are and why you are here and who is God and, you know, what is the meaning of my life? When you have this extraordinary life, it seems odd that those questions wouldn't arise in any meaningful way. So kripanaha palahetavaha. Those who are just basically pursuing the karma pala, the results of your action out of raga and dvesha, that's what their commitment, the word is kamatmanaha. The people who, not in this verse, in a previous verse, this kamatmanaha, persons who are just totally identified with that bhoga aishwarya. The bhoga aishwarya is I am committed to fulfilling the things that will give me pleasure, my bhogas. Bhoga means enjoyments. I want these things for my pleasure. And I want power, I want standing, I want people to respect me, so I should have power and I should have money and I should have enjoyments. And that is who I am. So the identification there, this adhyasa, in terms of my purpose in life, is acknowledged, in fact, in the chapter 17, which I encourage all of you to read, it's very nice, the chapter 17, and here, in this, it's acknowledged that kamatmanaha means that is my nature, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing. And so, those ones are called misers, and the seeking a life that is just made of raga, dvesha, and karmapala, he says to Arjuna, it is so far, very dhurena, very far inferior to to karma yoga, this buddhi yoga. It's very far inferior. And so therefore, buddhau saranam anvicha, therefore, apply yourself to this. May your passion, may your desire, may your raga be for this. Because we say, may your passion, may your desire really be for antakarana shuddhi and moksha. So if you're going to have raga dvesha, have this raga. The reason, let this raga be really, really strong. Because this raga is benign. In a sense, it's the only raga that is benign because it removes raga dvesha completely. And so with this raga, with this desire, with this passion, you'll resolve the whole problem. You'll resolve the ajnana, the self-ignorance, which causes the raga dvesha in the first place. It's a benign desire. All other desires are called, they have a word for them, anala. Analaha is a word for fire, right? And you know what it means? Na alam. There is not enough. There is never enough. So a fire is named analaha. Because with a fire, you have to keep throwing the wood in, you know? You throw it in, it doesn't say, okay, that's enough. It says more, more, more. So you can throw it endlessly. You can throw, I know, because I'm buying cords of wood up at the farm. You know? And it's analog. It's always, you're always having to keep an eye on it because it wants more, or it'll die. So you have to keep throwing it in and throwing it in and throwing it in. Desires are like that. You think this is, you may think this desire is going to be it now. If I get this, then all will be well with me. And you realize that as soon as you have accomplished that, another one rises up. Or a concern about that one rises up. Somebody may become an obstruction to stopping me from having that, or might take it away from me. But that will always come also. But with the shocking thing is when you really feel like if I could just have these things, even this set of things, you get the whole set. And you think, this is what I've always wanted, this is wonderful, this will do it for me. It doesn't. And it never does. And it never has from beginning this time. And so at some point, we understand the nature. We understand that nature, that the fruits of the karmapala, when you start thinking about it, the karmapala itself lasts for only a short time. And if you really think about it, there's another realization usually happens at the time of teaching. And that is, if you think of the desire template, I want this so that I can be happy. You have to realize in that desire template, in the positive or negative form, always the this, I want this, can be replaced by literally anything that you happen to want. I want this, and this, and this, and this, and this. It's infinite, actually. What can be here in this? This stands for anything you want. But you want this so that you can be happy. So what you really want is to be happy. And as long as you believe that this will do the job, then you want this. But this isn't really what you want. What you want is to be happy. And that's why when the this fails to continue to make you happy, then it drops out of the equation. This is no longer working. Because this really isn't what I want. What I want is to be happy. And so as we gain clarity in terms of our self-knowledge, you start to realize that the happiness is out of ignorance projected onto the this. That ananda is projected onto the this, and it doesn't exist on the this at all. Right? Whatever this stands for, the happiness is simply projected onto it, but does not belong to it. If it was its svabhava, if the ananda was its svabhava, svabhava means its nature, right? Its nature, then this thing would always make me happy, and it would make everybody happy. That would cause a stampede, you know? If it really contained a happiness, it would make me happy, you know? And it would make you happy, and it would make us happy all of the time. But as soon as as I say that to anybody, of course that's ridiculous, and we don't really feel that way. We don't think that way, but we act that way. Mm-hmm. You know, we act that way. We act that it is that that I need, that I want, so that I can be happy. So there is some sort of a transference of the ananda onto that object. But what about when, as I recognize at the time of teaching and whatever viveka that I've come into this teaching with, and then at the time of teaching, I really see it, I recognize that the ananda that I seek is myself. When I recognize that, what place, as I recognize that, I have to own it because I have lifetimes, beginning this lifetimes, of behaving the other way, as though the ananda is something to be sought. So my mind has so many riffs of behavior, you know. So many, like, musical riffs going this way and that way and this way, of so many riffs of behavior to go after the object. You know, that it's hard. You start to gain knowledge, and your mind doesn't just assimilate all of that in all parts of the mind. It takes some time, you know. But say you understand, even if your mind is not owning up to that understanding. Right? See, on emotion, you understand, your buddhi understands, but your mind is not owning that understanding. Okay? Nevertheless, you understand, you know. Once you know, once you get it, how does your raga dvesha after a karma pala, a result of an action, compare to karma yoga? What is the comparison? Because with karma yoga, you're gaining knowledge and you know what the source of ananda is. So either I'm going to know the source of ananda, you know, and do the karma yoga in order to retrain my mind, in a sense, from this just about an impulse to go after these objects that light up for me. Instead, I recognize I have a way of being with those, understanding Ishwara, understanding myself, so that my mind learns to stay home and be with me. It learns how to stay home, be with the self, which is the self of Ishwara, and to let Ishwara handle the karmapala. So in fact, for a jnani, for a mumukshu, the raga dveshas themselves more or less drop off. You know? If they're to the degree that they're there as mitya, because they're part of the prarabdha karma, but there's not something, there's no, what we say, we call them like this, these raga dveshas that still remain, say they're dagda bijas. They're like burnt seeds. They don't sprout into what a real raga dvesha sprouts into, which is anxiety and fear of loss and, you know, tension about whether or not I'm going to be able to fulfill the desire. All of these things, you know, all of the worries and all of the stress around fulfilling that particular raga or dvesha, getting rid of something, that is mitya. I can just let it be. I want this. If I don't get it, it's fine. What happens is I gain the same energy, but I respond to the fulfillment or lack of fulfillment, siddhi or asiddhi. I respond to that as I would respond to a preference. A preference is much different. If Swamiji uses the example, I would... These two sadhus go to a restaurant, you know, in Tamil Nadu. Swamiji is Tamilian, the other sadhu is from the north. Swamiji orders, Ilis and Sambar. His favorite, Ilis and Sambar. The other Swami orders chapatis and dal. Okay? That's his food. That's his favorite. So the restaurant is busy, the two Swamis are sitting there, Swamiji is waiting for his idli, the other for his chapatis, and the waiter comes and very, very quickly gives Swamiji the chapatis and gives the other person the idlis. And then they both just kind of look at each other and they go, well, okay. We don't have a food fight here. It's just simple preference, you know. Do I work for this? I work for this. I want this. I do. This is if I'm having some desire that's coming up in me. I work for this. I want this. It seems right. This is what I want to do. You go ahead and do it. Does it work out in the way you planned? Prasada buddhi. We don't know what's the best. That's the thing. There's a humility there. We don't know really what's the best for us. Not really. We know what we want. You know. We know what seems really good and really neat. But in the large scheme of things, we don't really know what's best. You know. So we learn how to be patient. You know. When I was younger, and I'd met Swamiji at this time, I was about 30 or so. I was living 32 or 33. I'd already done a course here. I'd been at the ashram, you know. I still had a few little ragged questions going on there. And one of my really, really good friends, got a couple of them actually, they taught me how to do the stock market, to trade stocks and to trade options. Okay? And so they were pretty good at it. And I was kind of just learning and following along and doing whatever they said. But I was learning how to do it, you know, as they were teaching me. And I was making some money, too. I was making like $4,000 or $5,000 a month, sometimes $2,000. So I was successful. And the reason I even had any money to start is that after we finished the first course, one of my students, I just need to entertain you for a little while for this story. Good story. One of my students, who'd been actually studied for a long time, and she'd been at the course and all of this, her dad passed away. And her father ran a dry cleaning shop. Okay? And he had run it for years, and he'd lost his wife many, many years back. So he'd been by himself running this dry cleaning shop for long time, and that my friend, my student, was an only child. And so when her father died, she had to go and take care of everything by herself. There was really nobody else. There weren't even relatives or anything. There was just her. She had to take care of the whole thing. And so she was cleaning out his house and cleaning out the dry cleaning shop in all kinds of nooks and crannies. She would find all of this money hidden all over the place, literally thousands of dollars in $100 bills, stacks of $100 bills stuck in here, this little crevice here, and stuck in these pockets here, because there are all these hiding places, and it was like, wow! And she was finding all of this cash. So she collected all of this, and what she did was I don't know if you've ever seen these little boxes that checks come in. Little check boxes, you know, checks for writing checks. So $100 bill fits perfect. It's the perfect size. So she filled up this little check box with $100 bills and wrapped it all up and gave it as a present to me. I said, oh, what is this? And she told me the whole story. And so that was my trading capital. I know. Okay. So These guys, you know, Chuck, I don't know, you probably don't know him, but Chuck and Steve and these fellows, there's several guys, they were just really into this trading, so they were teaching me all about it. And I loved it, and I used to love math and all of that type of stuff anyway. I was totally into it, and I was being successful in these options. Okay. So I decided that I really wanted to work at, you know, a stockbroker's office. Yeah, honestly, that's really what I wanted to do. I'm really excited about it. This is after being at the course and teaching and doing all that. I love you. I love you. And so there was this job that opened up, and it was kind of a nice place, nice brokerage, and I interviewed for it. With two people. I interviewed with a man was one of the owners, and then there was a woman also who was another, there were two owners. And so I interviewed with both of them, and I was really into this, really, really wanted it. And when I interviewed with the man, he was very, very positive. The woman was a little not so. But she's nice, she's polite, but she wasn't really positive. So I didn't know about her. But anyway, I was just hoping, thinking, I really want this Bible and I really want to do this. This will be really, really what I need to do right now and all this stuff. Yeah. So I didn't get it. I did not get the job. And I was fit to be tied. I can't even believe this. I'm just sharing it with you. I was so angry. I was so upset, you know, because I felt like it was a conspiracy. Like Bhagavan would not let me have this. It's one thing that I really, really wanted, you know. I really wanted to do this. And I thought I would be able to support myself and everything would be fine. You know, anyway, I was very upset. And I went. I was living in Santa Barbara, you know. And I was teaching a lot of classes at this time. Okay? So I took a walk down on the beach, and I sat there and I just cried my eyes out. I was so upset, you know, so angry that I didn't get this job. Okay? And so I recovered, you know, after a few days, it was gone. I recovered. Okay? And then we continued doing our trading. So continued doing the trading. And I was making good money and everything was good. And then I can't remember the year, it was like 83 or 84, something like that. The market turned around from a bear market, a market that's going down, 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 down. They're going down for years. And we were always playing what you call shorts. You bet on the market to go down because it had been in a bear market for years, right? And also the advisors we were calling were still certain that it was still in a bear market. So we had gone from making betting options to actually betting on the stocks where you can lose absolutely everything. There's no limit to what you can lose, actually. So we had turned into that because for whatever reason. Bhagavan, again. The market turned. And I ended up being, I think it was $10,000 in the hole. In the hole means no cash and owing $10,000. And so that put a total end. It put a total end to anything to do with the stock market. And I slowly, after many years, paid that $10,000 back. Yeah. So. Since that time, but for me, you know, honestly, I don't know if anybody's had probably not that experience, but an experience where you've had Bhagavan has said no. No matter how much you want it, no matter, you don't know what you want. I was just deluded. I was just in, I don't know what happened to me. I was deluded. Somebody had to say no. If Bhagavan hadn't said no, I'd be a stockbroker right now. You know? Can you imagine? You know? Or be like $50,000 or $100,000 in debt, which is not that unusual for people in the stock market. Things happen, you know. And so, from that time on, I mean, I have other stories along the way, but this is the best one, you know. From that, you know, in hindsight, and I think that's a huge kind of huge example, but. In hindsight, you learn to respect those no's, you know, until those raga dveshas are basically gone. You give up on them. But let me tell you, I wasn't mature enough at that time to give up on raga dvesha. That's just not where my psyche was. I still had the raga dvesha. You know, I wanted to do this, and I wanted to do that, and I wanted to do this and that. And I had somewhat of a prasada buddhi, but I didn't even really understand it in the depth that you do some years later, you know. And so there comes a time as your mind settles down with this knowledge, with the fruits of this knowledge, which means your mind starts to just enjoy the ananda of your being, right? As and to the, I would say like this, almost like a formula, to the degree that your mind is in sitting with your own ananda, to that degree the vairagya becomes very real. It's not that this can't make me happy, it's that I'm already happy. You know, that's very different. So if I want something, if I want something, it's already just a preference because I'm no longer dependent upon it for my happiness, not even unconsciously, you know, kind of as a habitual way of behaving. So as your mind settles down and as you understand that karma yoga buddhi, you become more and more full and more complete. And this raga, what it amounts to is that the raga dvesha is not worth it. It's not worth it because it's in a way disturbing to your ananda, and it's delusional anyway. And it's delusional in the sense that my ananda is not out there. The only thing that happens when I seek an object so that I can be happy, when I fulfill that desire, I get a shanti vritti for that moment because and only because the desire that I had a desire for, that desire has been filled. And so in that moment, I'm desireless. Right? I'm desireless. A desireless mind just simply is present. Present to what is, and responds out of your own being, you know, to the environment, because it itself is not seeking anything. And so as your mind more and more settles just into your own presence, less and less do you have any desire to disturb it, you know. And that becomes true absolutely for everything, even for not just raga dvesha, these are always forms of raga dvesha, but say, you know, somebody is being irritating or problematic or mean to me or whatever those things are. It really is not worth my changing my shanta vritti. You know, it's much better just to be objectively, as Swamiji will say, just be objective, to objectively be with that situation and handle it. You know, he handled everything. He never got angry or anything. It was just, this is a difficult situation. Let's see how we can handle it. That's all. You know, a difficult person, let's see what we can do to make it better. That's it. You know, it's never anything personal. And you're hurting me, you know. You're hurting me means I'm buying into that whole thing. And so the mind, as we really look into the, like if we really look into this karma yoga buddhi and understand it in reference to the fact, to the facts are that a projected ananda is a projected ananda. You can run after it all you want, but nothing's going to happen really, because it isn't there, it's projected. And so as human beings, you know, if you're lucky enough to have the mukshitvam, you want to get to a space, your mind wants to anyway, simply just be happy. Be happy means be whole, be complete. Better way even to say it is, I just want to be myself. I just want to be myself, and I want to respond to the world from out of myself. And the nature of myself is so whole and complete and beautiful, you know, and it can't be improved upon. And that's what we discover. Who you are cannot be improved upon. And so accepting myself, just being with myself, and doing inner work and outer work, all with that karma yoga buddhi, that's where I want to be. And that's all I end up doing. That becomes my life. And as when I become a jnani, as I gain really nishya, then I have that in full measure, right? And as long as I have the kartritvam, the doership, I'm responding to the world with that karma yoga buddhi, prasada buddhi. And in fact, the raga dveshas, or that I would say the The desires that I have that come up, they just arise. They arise out of your prarabdha karma, and then you fulfill those desires if they're dharmic and they're there to be fulfilled, but with that prasada buddhi. And if there's no desire there, you just do. You be here, and be with your life, and do the things that need to be done. With that, again, with that prasada buddhi. So it's just all becomes just Ishwara. More and more for you, with that karma yoga buddhi, it all becomes Ishwara, because as even though the kartritva and the doership is still there until it's not, you know, you keep seeing and responding to the world as Ishwara, and receiving everything as prasada. You know, so it sounds just Ishwara. In terms of the experience and the way you handle the world. And for a jnani, it's that kartritvam is not there. It's Ishwara all of the way. The self is Ishwara, the body is Ishwara, the mind is Ishwara, the sense organs are Ishwara, the whole creation is Ishwara. I am Ishwara. Ishwara is me. Right? And so then, when that's the case, I let this body, mind, sense organs belong to Ishwara, which it already does. So you're letting the body and the mind and the sense organs and everything that makes you an individual, you let it belong to Ishwara. Like, you know, we let the cells in the body, but they all need to let themselves belong to the body. The heart needs to belong to the body. The whole structure and all the laws that make this work take care of everybody in it. And so the more I live that out, the more true I realize it is. The more I relax, because the more I feel, I recognize over and over, you know, that I'm contained, that this life is, this life in the form of the prarabdha karma is something that is given. This life is taking place. You know, I'm not creating this life. I'm not the karma phala hetu. You know? Bhagavan says, don't do that. Don't be a karma phala hetu. That's a losing proposition. You know, you'll really suffer. Don't do that. I'm the karma phala hetu. I'm the one who's responsible, you know, for the karma pala. But if you really understand that, then you can relax. You can relax and you can watch and appreciate how Bhagavan handles all of these situations. And you have your part. You have your part to play always. It's not like you don't have anything to do. That's what Bhagavan said. Don't think you don't have anything to do, Arjuna. Don't think you can just sit back. No, you have your part to play, you know. But play that part that's given to you. The problem is, until we have not knowledge, we're not happy with our part, you know, because we don't recognize the ananda as my own being. We don't recognize that, and so we're always searching for it. And so the mind is always having tension, so it's not feeling very happy. If you're not happy with what you have, you have to go outside of what you have. And so what we have is never good enough. That's why we always collect the things that we think will make us happy, but it's never good enough. Because it doesn't really exist out there. The ananda is not out there. And so there's continual tension, and then we try to get something else that will do the job, and it just never does. So what about when you just really enjoy your life? You know, be present to your life. And then receive all of the karma poles. You do your actions to the best of your ability, and you accept the results as prasad. Because the results are the karta, really, if there's any karta, it's Ishwara. You know, and the karma phala is Ishwara. So this is Ishwara's creation. I'm included in it. You know, let me just be with it as it is. And then you find it's magical. The whole creation is so, so magical that you get the things that you need because you need them. You get what you need, and you need them. And then that's why I told you this terrible story. Because I was so rejecting of the whole thing. I was really angry, really pissed off at Bhagavan. That was how I talked to them. Really furious. You know? But you know what? When you look back at your life, you know, you see the blessing. And sometimes you're pushing against your prarabdha karma for whatever, trying to break out of it, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. You're trying to get out of it somehow because it looks like a you know, there's a mirage over there. You know? So you're trying to push through your prarabdha karma into somebody else's. And Bhagavan just doesn't let you do that. You know? It's no, you're not going to be able to do that. And so you'll just get pushed back. You know? But at some point, you start to love that. Because you feel held and you have trust, you know. And as you mature, you don't want anything except what is anyway. Because you're no longer projecting the ananda onto anything else. So, in the next verse, we've got some time, let's do the next verse. We say here.
Bhuti-yukto jahatiha
Ubhe sukrita duṣkṛte Tasmāt yogāya yujjasva
Tasmāt yogāya yujjasva
Yogah karma sukhaushalam
Yogah karma sukhaushalam
Buddhi yuktaha jahati iha ube sukrita duskrite tasmat yogaya yujaswa yogaha karmasu kaushalam. So being a buddhi yuktaha, being one who has this buddhi, this karma yoga buddhi, which is this summit form, means where, because I receive everything as prasad, I'm always just with Bhagavan, and I receive the results of all of my actions, or whatever happens to, whatever, you can say it like that, I receive whatever happens to me, that prasad of buddhi. I have that shraddha, you know, and I also understand myself, I'm gaining knowledge, and so I have that shraddha, I receive everything, with that karma yoga buddhi, which gives the mind what we call the samatva. Means that whatever is taking place, my attitude toward it is as prasad. You know, prasad is what I was being offered. I offered something to the Lord, I'm making an offering to the Lord, and the Lord gives me back, gives it back to me as prasad. And so, you know, whether you're getting that samatha means prasad is prasad, and it's not about whether I'm receiving some water or sandal paste or a flower, or a laddu. Laddu is a sweet. Or I'm receiving a whole meal. Prasad is prasad. It has nothing really to do with what the object is, or with what is coming your way. It's not about, the attitude that you have is not about what is coming toward you. It's that the prasada buddhi is how you receive that. And that prasada buddhi is always the same. It has that samatvam. You know, we do karmas and whatnot for different results, but seeing Ishwar as the karma pala data, you know, we receive the results of the prasada buddhi, and that prasada buddhi is sama. It's always the same, because it is not about the object. So now he says the buddhi yuktaha, the one who's endowed with this buddhi, with this karma yoga buddhi, jahati, that person gives up here itself, iha, ube sukrita duskrite, gives up both sukrita, that which is well done, and here sukrita means punya, gives up punya and gives up papa. Yeah. Both gives up both punya and papa. Tasmat, therefore, yogaya yujaswa, may you commit yourself to yoga, to that karma yoga buddhi. And then it says, that yoga, karmasu kaushalam, has to do with kaushalam. That yoga, this is the second definition, is kaushalam, means discrimination, or Prince Swamiji uses a good word, discretion. He uses the word discretion, is discretion in action. So that's the verse. So let me talk a little bit about that. Punya and papa, within the Vedic world, the good actions that I do, the rituals that I do, the dhanam, the giving of gifts, the charities, all of these good actions that I do, as a samsari, I do those actions in order to accrue punya. Punya is what allows me to take a better next birth, or to go to the heaven worlds, or to be blessed in the next birth with positive results that will make me happy. So saying the Prarabdha Karma, they say that this life, the Prarabdha Karma, is actually in the sloka, gives me 50-50, punya and papa. That's why you see your life as more like this, the sukha-dukha, sukha-dukha, whatever, sukha-dukha. Because it's a mix of punya and papa. The punya, punya are the positive results of previous actions. So if I'm kind to somebody, if I'm doing my dharma, if I'm doing what is dharma, ahimsa, the golden rule, you know, I'm living a dharmic life, I'm accruing punya. If I'm living a dharmic life, hurting others, you know, in one way or another, I'm accruing papa karmas. Those punya and papa karmas are not exhausting here in this lifetime. They're exhausting usually after, in the next lifetime and lifetimes to come. So the punya and papa are the subtle, what we call the subtle results of our action. They're called adrishtapalas, results that are not yet seen. They're stored. They're in unmanifest condition and stored, and are drawn on every time you take another birth. So in the Vedic tradition, the Hindu tradition, the people just generally, a Hindu in general, is very knowledgeable, I would say, and concerned about their behavior in terms not only of what we call the drishtapala. Drishtapala are those seen results that are happening here and now. Drishta means that which is seen. So results that are seen, like for instance, if I want a drink of water and I go and get a drink of water, and when I drink the water, that I've gone and done the action and I've got the pala, and it's immediate here in this world. So I experience the results of the action here in this world. But there's also unseen results that more have to do with dharma adharma. So the dharma adharma actions will give both an immediate result, but they also give what's called adrishtapala, an unseen result. And those unseen results are called punya and papa. And those punya, that punya and papa is stored in the sanchitta. It doesn't go to waste. It's stored there in the sanchitta waiting for your next birth, and then there's a whole, probably infinite number of sanchitta karmas in the next birth, depending on who you are at the time of your death, the time of dropping this body. Which of those sanchitta karmas do you attract to you to take this next birth? And that's all just part of the laws of karma. It's not something that we can really influence, even though people try to influence. You know, in India, the person who's dying, the family will sit around and chant, you know, Rama, 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 you know, to try to get the person to hang on, to just think of the Lord at the time of death, because then you'll be a good bhakta. When you die, and you'll attract a lot of punya to you. Mm-hmm. So they're just doing that to try to keep that person steady, to hold Bhagawan in their mind, so when they pass, they'll get a better next birth. But in India, this I have in my mind that my good karmas and my kind actions are accruing punya. That's part of it. It's not even that I'm in my mind, I'm trying to get as much punya as I can. It's not even that. It's that I know that when I'm doing dharma and I'm being kind and doing what is expected of me, that I'm accruing punya, which will influence the next birth that I have, so that I at least get as good a birth as I had this time, or better. You know, and that some of my desires that were thwarted this life, maybe they'll be fulfilled in the next life. So this is all just general knowledge that everybody has. But what I'm saying is that punya and papa play a big role in my psyche, and even in the way I am toward the world. And of course, in rituals, I'm doing rituals, certain rituals and austerities, in order to accrue more punya and to neutralize papa. That's why I'm often doing all of the rituals and so careful to do them, what is enjoined to do them, for accruing punya and warding off papa. Okay. So that's very much in a Hindu mind. It's just like breathing. is there. But for a mumukshu, punya and papa is not why I'm doing the karma. Yeah. Even receiving everything as prasad to buddhi, it's not so that I can get more punya and have a better next birth. Because I've already realized those limitations. That is not why I'm doing any karma. And I'm doing lots of karma because there's a lot of karma here to be done. Bhagavan, every moment you're doing karma. Every day there's all kinds of things asked of you. You're involved in this, involved in that. You're busy. You know, we're always busy. Okay? So we're always engaged in karma. But we're doing that karma with the karma yoga buddhi, not to gain punya and papa, but to gain antakarana shuddhi. Just to gain antakarana shuddhi. So that I see everything as Ishwara. Right? And I accept all the results of my actions as Ishwara. And so I'm doing karma with that buddhi, which gives me the samatva buddhi. Samatva means that shanti, you know, in there, the constancy of that shanti, because the samatva means it always stays the same, no matter what results are coming my way. That karma yoga buddhi, I need to gain this knowledge and to hold this knowledge, because my mind needs to be available. The regular mind is not available for very long at a time. To have the shanti to be able to let this knowledge take place, to be able to see it, you know, without being distracted by this raga and dvesha, you know, and this emotional reaction and that one and that one and that one, all these reactions to the universe itself, that inhibits really my even being able to have a mind that can be present to receive this knowledge, let alone to hold it. Hold it, going from a newspaper holding coals to, you know, a kettle holding coals. The mind has to become available. So here he says, the one who is a buddhi yukta, who knows this, who has this karma yoga buddhi, they give up both punya and papa. Because my intent is not to gain a better next life. My intent is to gain moksha. And moksha requires antakarana shuddhi. And I want to gain moksha because I want to gain my own being, the very source of the ananda, which I would be going to the next life for. Again, chasing the ananda. I would be going to the heaven world for. That will make me happy. These, if I could only do this. I remember once I wanted to be a tennis player. I couldn't play tennis well. So let me be a next life I'll be a tennis player. Let me be a tennis player. Nevertheless, okay. But we have these things, you know. When you're done, you're done. You don't have anything like that. Oh, I'm going to want to be a tennis player. Or maybe I want to, you know, own a ranch and ride horses. I love all of these things, but I don't want to take another birth for it. So we kind of grow in that way. No thanks. It's fine. Those are really nice, beautiful things in the creation. But no need to take another birth for those things. The jnana, the one has that karma yoga buddhi, which is going to mature into knowledge, gives up both. Ube means both in the dual. Ube, sukrita, dushkrita, dvandva in the dual. Accusative dual, they give up both punya and papa. Therefore, Arjuna, yogaya yujaswa, prepare yourself, commit yourself to this karma yoga buddhi that I'm teaching you. And then he says, that yoga is karmasu kaushalam. So I'm going to take in the morning, I'm going to take this karmasu kaushalam. We have these two words from the 48, samatvam yogaha uchate, which we've done for now. Now it's yogaha karmasu kaushalam. These two, samatva and kaushala, both are very important for understanding the karma yoga. So we've gone over it a little bit. I'll just make it more clear. Okay.
shishyate.